Somebody gave an interesting solution to the heat problem. It was a prayer addressed to Lord Hanuman to come and eat the sun once again so that we all may be. It was a very cute prayer. So, as I was wondering what we should read today, of course, we had decided that the subject of death has to be covered at least in two classes. So I saw something very interesting and I thought must share it. We know that the Lord dwells in all things and therefore everything can teach us. Everything is our master in some way or the other. So today the Lord came in the form of a crow, thirsty crow. And I had a whole story about the thirsty crow which we read in the class. So that's a story about the intelligence of a crow which puts the stone and picks up. But this was a very interesting crow because this thirsty crow taught a lot about yoga and spirituality. So this crow was, as I was sitting there right in that corridor, which has been blessed by Shurbindo's feet, I have heard, and of course many others, luminaries who have crossed the way. And I saw this crow in the afternoon who was looking for water. His beak was open and he was really thirsty, trying to pick up from here, there, little bit of water film below because there is a tap there. So he was trying to touch. So he could sense that there is somewhere water here. And the water was right where he was sitting on top of the tap. But he just couldn't manage it. So he was trying to put the beak, twisting it, putting under the nozzle under the tap, and sometime with great effort half a drop would come, making him feel that yes, I am right, there is water. But what is to be done exactly to get water? And this continued for some time. So I was caught between the urge to go inside and the other urge to help the crow. So I thought, let me first feed a crow, that's more important because he is really miserable. So I got up to open the tap and lo and behold, the crow flew away. So I said, this is a perfect lesson of yoga that one, we are thirsty. Somewhere within us, we feel that yes, there is the water. Like Shobindo says in one of his poems, Lord, I am thirsty. And the thirst itself indicates that there is water somewhere. So we are thirsty and somewhere we know there is water. And sometimes we are very near the water. And yet, we do not make that simple maneuver of opening the tap. The crow could open it. It was equipped with both the intelligence and I was just contemplating that if it could just move a little bit, its claws, it can definitely open the tap. I was sure about it. But it can't, and there is no way to make it understand that, look, you know, all that you need is this. The second option is that we can't do it, the Lord can do it for us. But when the Lord does it, we are afraid. So we run away, fly away. Mother speaks about it that when Shurbindo would give his force, he speaks in a context, you know, when she said that there is no error. And even what we see as perversion in the world, is essentially behind it, there is the Lord. So she says, how does truth become this? So in that sense, she says that how when Shobindo put his force into someone, the person reacted with fear. And he said, oh my God, I am afraid, I am afraid. And then she says, look, this is what happens. He put his force and the person experienced it as fear. It also reminded me of Dilip Kumar Roy's story where he said that do these things really exist? I want to experience them. Mother said, okay, at a particular time you sit and meditate and I'll give you whatever is necessary. So he was waiting anxiously and he sat down and meditated in his room. But as he proceeded, he became more and more full of sweat and afraid and apprehensive. His heartbeat raced up and then eventually he was very afraid and he gave up. So he asked the mother, she said, yes, exactly, I came and you were so close, so closed that the more I put pressure, the more you would react in this way. So much so that I had to abandon the whole experiment. And it's so true that many of the things that we call as illness and problems may well be the Lord's pressure. And so the wonderful remedy Mother has given us, that open, become wide, relax, receive, rather than push in a very egoistic way that effort makes, blocks us and comes in the way of the very thing we want to really realize, to give ourselves. So this was, all this the crow taught actually. So the Lord through the form of a crow. So I just thought I'll share it before we go in. And it connects with what we are going to read on death. So we read last time about death and mainly about what happens after death. And it means different things to different people. And the mother also says that it is a multitude of things. It's not one thing. So there are various things which come under the rubric of death. And as we see in Savitri, death assumes many forms. For instance, there is a kind of death where the soul leaves and the body continues. In fact, there is a very scary picture in Savitri where Sri Aurobindo speaks about it, that the soul abandons this bodily house and only a body and mind are left to die, to live and die. So this is a very dangerous scenario. But there are some people who are protected. She gave example of few who continued to live even though their soul had left 1 year or 2 years before. Of course, they were under mother's great care. So that's a different story altogether. And the mother, they continued to live out of habit. So it's a very interesting thing that even when the soul leaves, the body can continue to live for some time out of habit. Only problem is various kinds of forces may be drawn to such a body, because it has tasted something of the sweetness of the divine essence which has entered, and it can sometime become instruments of all kinds of forces which can express itself as derangements of various kinds. The second thing where she says, but if the psychic being leaves, that means the soul has developed to a point where there is a conscious psychic personality, then if it leaves, then the body invariably dies, except, and there she gives her own exception, where the mother, once for 10 years after Sri Aurobindo's physical withdrawal, she left her psychic being, she locked her psychic being, and for 10 years, because otherwise she would just leave. It was impossible for her to continue to stay here. And another, when for 4 years, when she was away to Japan and Paris, she left her psychic being here with Sri Aurobindo. And eventually she came back and she felt seriously ill, and all kinds of things she went through because she had done it. But of course, this was something which only she could do. There are some examples in history, at least there is one example which is there of this kind of what is called as coming, leaving the soul and leaving the body at least, and later on re-entering the body. That is another phenomena which comes under the rubric of death. And that too mother has experienced. There are a couple of examples in history. One that I remember is Shankaracharya, when he has the Vedantic knowledge, but he doesn't know about Tantra. And without knowing the Tantra, the knowledge is incomplete. And that's why Sri Aurobindo brings in both elements in this yoga. So with all his Vedantic knowledge, he defeats Mandan Mishra in a debate and is declared the winner. But then Mandan Mishra's wife comes and she says, I don't accept that you have won. So he says, why? What is it that I don't know? He says, you don't know about human relationships. And he was sure enough he didn't know. Vedanta had taught him all is alone and there is the one and the infinite. So if you can tell me about it, then I would believe that you really know Vedanta, because the Shruti says, knowing that, all else is known. So you ought to know it. So he says, no, I don't know. So he says, okay, I'll come back after 1 month. So he goes and he tells his disciples that safeguard my body. He leaves the body and looks for somebody who's going to die. So it was a king. Obviously a king can support this kind of consciousness. So somebody developed. So he enters into the body of the king. As he's going to die, he's revived. And people are very happy, not knowing that it's just 1 month of experience. And he gets the experience of worldly life and relationships for 1 month, and then he comes out and the king dies. This is a story documented in history. And the mother had this kind of experiences a number of times. Once went for days. She says that the mind and the vital both had withdrawn far above, but simply the body would continue to live with the spirit of the form, which we read last time, that normally it takes 7 days for the spirit of the form to withdraw. And till that withdraw, some kind of a life is going on inside the body, and it's not healthy, not ideal to burn the body or to cremate it, because it's a kind of jolt to the being. But then we are what we are, and the law is what it is. So this is how we treat, and she says that we create misery for those who have withdrawn by these actions. But she could withdraw, and she says that my body could continue all the activities. This is very unlike Shankaracharya, where the body had to be guarded because it's dangerous. But because of this intimate, intricate knowledge, which is not described anywhere, at least to my knowledge, having read all these scriptures, where she, her bodily life continued, she continued to eat, walk, even speak, purely by the spirit of the form, just keeping a small little link. This was in, of course, in Algeria. Then there is another experience in Algeria where while during one of these activities, she goes very high and discovers a mantra. And that is the time when mother, she was not expert in Sanskrit, and she says there is something written over this mantra. So Theo was grounded and she could speak because of that practice. So he asked, what is written? So she described the exact image, and it was her name, Mira, and it was the mantra of life which only she could receive. So he says, yes, take it and give it to me. And sure enough, last minute she realized that it's most dangerous to give it to him, and she said no. And that is the time he cut off the cord of the mother which connects to this body, and she would have it was a death already, but it would have meant not being able to come back. And this is a unique example in the whole history where she comes back partly because of a tremendous occult knowledge, and partly because Theo realized that it's so dangerous, he can't absolve himself ever of this karma, and together they join the cord again and she enters the body. And then she says, it was an excruciating pain that I experienced. And she says this pain lasted for quite some time. It was an excruciating pain entering again into the body. This is another unique example. Otherwise, mostly it is a withdrawal in the mind and the vital at the most, those who go into trance states. And in an extreme case, there is still the cord connected. And during that phase, the heartbeat and the respiration may stop. This is an authentic case documented by Paul Brunton, where he speaks about a yogi in whose case he actually measured and saw the heartbeat coming slower and slower and slower till it stopped, and after 20 minutes it picked up again. Now, the interesting part is Sri Aurobindo describes this experience in Savitri. He dared to step in into that magic place when the heart stopped beating and the breathing stops. So obviously Sri Aurobindo had experienced about it, but he doesn't write like anywhere, and obviously no known biography of Sri Aurobindo would record it. But the fact is that obviously he had this experience that to enter into that domain, you have to pass through what is called as death ordinarily, the stopping of the heartbeat, the stopping of the respiration, the cessation of all the functions, and to go into a state which is called a suspended animations. And the Egyptians knew about it, and possibly the Indians also. The mother describes it in one of her Egyptians, of course, knew how to preserve the spirit of the form and keep it for a very long time. That's what is the mummy. And she says why people, because they disturb a pyramid where the mummies are there. The well-known story of Tutankhamen, where many of them died. And naturally, the spirit of the form reacts. One place she says that possibly in one of her very previous births as a princess in Kashmir, she saw that the body is still lying under the Himalayas, still preserved. So it's an amazing kind of whole domain. And we are so fortunate that this rare knowledge, which is not to be found anywhere, all that we have knowledge is like Tibetan Book of Death. It's, if you look at what Mother has revealed, it's so superficial. Certain things are very useful, which we shall see how they are useful. Or for instance, Yog Vasisht, which is very scary about death. or Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which is of course tries to tell us in some detail about what happens when we leave the body, not about the different worlds, but definitely about how the self prepares to leave, what are the signs that one is going to die. The doctor need not tell us, and the signs are very obvious. The mind begins to fail. Probably all of us are beginning to enter that category. The senses begin to fail, and then the end is the life breath withdrawing. The Brihadaranyaka also reveals a very important truth, which the mother confirms. When she was asked, is sleep the same as death? She says, no, they are very different phenomena. So people who are scared that they may die during sleep, it's an absurd fear. Rarely it can happen, and who knows whether it's good or bad. But what happens is that in sleep, only the mental consciousness withdraws, and of course the soul, which is under that cloth. But the vital remains in the body. And because the vital remains devoid of the mental control, so there are phases in which the body may go into a chaotic state. But then, because the mind has not completely withdrawn, it returns back. But in death, the life force, the prana, also withdraws. And the Brihadaranyaka talks about it. It also speaks about the difference between sleep and death. So there has been some kind of a knowledge, very interesting, deep knowledge, but nothing that the mother gives us. And what she reveals later on is something much amazing. So all this she has done, realized, experienced before a very momentous event, and that we will read today, before the 13th of April 1962, or more specifically 3rd of April 1962. But later on she says, all that I said earlier, and that knowledge already surpasses what is there in the Upanishads. She says, this is the one which is most complete. So it's interesting that she gives us something which goes one step further. And this is also important, because very often we raise the question, and very foolishly we talk about, you know, mother's withdrawal or mother leaving the body, and discuss things about transformation, or, you know, whether she abandoned the work. These are very foolish questions. She has herself made it very, very clear what really happened. But first, we read about 7 days, and somebody asked a question, so what do we do now? Because we don't keep the body for 7 days. So what is the next best? So here she gives the next best. She says in her context that when she was 3/4 dead and people were taking care, I was fully conscious, fully, but I was like a dead person. And it wasn't that I couldn't move, but I couldn't manifest anything. I didn't want to. I was in a state of bliss and couldn't have cared less about what was going to happen. And then she says, well, that's what I think must happen to those who die in a state of grace. So she tells us this is the way that we have to follow. We don't have to worry about the present laws, but to die in a state of grace. The Gita speaks about dying with God's name, but the mother speaks about dying in a state of grace. It's true, some people die well and others don't. It all depends on one's state of consciousness. So there is a good way to die. If at death you withdraw from physical circumstances, from ordinary physical consciousness, and unite with the great universal force or the divine presence, then all these little things, it's not that you are not conscious of them. So what are these little things? Somebody is taking you, putting fire, burying you, all these things, you will still be conscious. You are very conscious. Conscious of what others are doing. Conscious that some people are weeping. Many are rejoicing that, oh, now one more room is free for somebody else to come in. Who knows? But she says it doesn't matter. You know, we read last time the experience of Benjamin, who came to mother that they have taken away the furniture out of my room. And mother said, you don't need it. But in other cases, she kept Dilip Kumar Roy's room for a long time, that, you know, he would come at night and take rest. So it's best to keep the room for some time, because who knows, the being may want to take rest. It's not that you are not conscious of them. It's not important. But for those who are attached to people and things when they die, it must be a hellish torment. So the important part is, at least before death, best is during life, not to be attached to things and people. So there are very interesting things which I have seen, and maybe some other day, either to talk about it or write, some very interesting deaths within the ashram context. One where a person very consciously said that he didn't want to see anybody, which included his wife. And I had to reconfirm it, that, are you sure? He said, yes. And it was a very painful thing for me to communicate to the lady and everybody that probably we should respect his wish and nobody should be around. And mind you, it was a happy life. It's not that it was a sad life. And from 6 p.m. onwards, he didn't see anybody. And at 1 o'clock, sitting in a sitting posture, he left his body. Very interesting. The other way, some people go into coma to cut off this attachment, because slowly, slowly the senses withdraw and we think it's coma and the person is suffering. But it may be one way to release from attachment. Also something we can do from our side, and that's what the Tibetan Book of Death says, and it's a very useful thing. I myself practiced it at times, and it's very very good to tell the person sometimes, even a comatose person in the ears, to whisper, look, everything is fine, we are fine, you proceed on your journey, don't worry about us. You know, we would love to see you go further and go ahead. That may be too much to say, but definitely that, you know, please go ahead. It's a wonderful thing to go ahead. Think of mother, go towards her. So it helps the consciousness to get detached. Sometimes we are very attached to things and people, environment, and that can be a terrible, terrible bondage, and it's a hellish torment. So this we can avoid. But all this, the mother says, after this new experience. And what is that experience? We'll read today. This happened on April 3rd, 1962, and the background was that it was the result of a tremendous attack where the mother, after that, the mother never really came down, 1962, when she really withdrew into the upper room. And she went through what was felt by many as a serious illness. But what was happening during that she reveals. I am no more in my body. So first thing she says is this. I have left the Lord to take care of it, if it is to have the supramental or not. I know. So she knows the truth. And I have also said that now is the last fight. So this was the critical, crucial day. If the purpose for which the body is alive is to be fulfilled, that is to say, the first steps towards the supramental transformation, then it will continue today. It is the Lord's decision. So categorically, mother says, one, that I know what is going to happen. Number two, she says, it's the Lord's decision. If it continues today, that means the first steps, she doesn't talk about the final or whatever, she says the first steps towards the supramental transformation. And then she says that I have left it completely. It's the last fight, and the last fight is today. The fight is within the body. It can't go on. They must be defeated, or else this body is defeated. All depends on what the Lord decides. It is the battlefield. After all, it depends on Him. He knows if the time has come or not, the time for the beginning of the victory, then the body will survive. If not, in any case, my love and consciousness will be there. So she makes sure that in case the body has to leave that very day, she wants to assure that in any case, my love and consciousness will be with all. And this is really like a divine mother who is speaking. Then this passage goes, and something very interesting she says later on, that on that day she experienced that how this attack which took place physically had taken another form. And it was a very virulent attack. And she says that attack was to turn the supramental yoga and the supramental change into something very cruel and merciless. That there will be people who will say that supramental yoga and the new race is going to be very cruel and merciless and heartless. She says, and everybody must know that this is not true, not true at all. That the teaching of Sri Aurobindo is great, and the Lord is great and mighty and vast, and His teaching is a teaching of love and truth and vastness. See, cautions, because you know she had experienced that moment. It's a teaching of love and oneness. And then 10 days cross and the victory comes. This also she reveals. 62 itself she speaks about the victory. This we have read earlier, but just a little bit. Night of April 12th to 13th. Suddenly in the night, I woke up with the full awareness of what we could call the yoga of the world. The supreme love was manifesting through big pulsations, and each pulsation was bringing the world further in its manifestation. It was the formidable pulsations of the eternal, stupendous love. So we just read what that force wanted. On one side, to make sure that the mother loses the battle. The Asura thinks always like that. And it's always the last minute that the victory takes place. Shurvinda speaks about it in one of his aphorisms, that there are four steps to the fight between Kali and the Asura. So the first is when he catches hold of her by the head, hairs. The second, when he drags her. The third, when he tries to kill her. And fourth, Kali slays him. That's the end of the story. So this is the whole step, and we see this happening here. She speaks about the victory of love. Only love, each pulsation of the love that was carrying the universe further in its manifestation. And the certitude that what is to be done is done. And the supramental manifestation is realized. She doesn't say it will be done. She doesn't say will be realized. She says is done, is realized. The certitude that what is to be done is done, she repeats again. All the results of the falsehood had disappeared. Death was an illusion. Sickness was an illusion. Ignorance was an illusion. Something that had no reality, no existence. Only love and love and love and love. Immense, formidable, stupendous, carrying everything. So this and the thing is done. The heavens are singing with chants of victory. Truth alone exists. Truth alone shall manifest. So this is what she experiences. Then what happened to the body? She has already spoken of that the thing is done and it is realized. So what was it that we were seeing? She has said that ignorance is an illusion. What is it that we were experiencing? She has gone to the other side, and something she has done which we can only sense. And the example that comes closest is that, it's an example that every day I experience. Sometimes somebody is cooking something in the building. So as I am climbing up the stairs, I get the aroma. So I know something is being prepared, but I don't know where, in which house, and even what is being prepared, except when it is fish. So we know something of the aroma was felt by humanity, that yes, there is this aroma of love. But very few could contact that which was done. So she reveals something very interesting. For instance, I am walking a little now. This is May 13, 1962. Again, another month later on. When I start walking, I become aware of a rather peculiar state. She is describing what she is experiencing as what her body is. What we are seeing is something else. I might describe it as what gives me the illusion of a body. She laughs. I entrust it to the person I walk with. So one is the illusion of a body which she has already entrusted. It's not my responsibility. The other person has to make sure it doesn't fall, doesn't bump into everything, anything. And the consciousness, that is the bodily consciousness, is a limitless consciousness, like a material equivalent or expression of these gusts. It's like waves, but waves with no separate waves, but a movement of waves. So exactly what she's experienced on April 13th, she's now experiencing in the bodily consciousness, that it's a vast, limitless expanse, like an ocean within which there are waves. So what is happening to the body? She says, I've entrusted it to the Lord and these people who are taking care. Much later, she says, they have taken admirable care. This is something which is very touching. And I must thank that The Lord has arranged the circumstances that they have taken admirable care of this body. So this is what she says. But here she speaks about what is her experience of the body and what is the experience of others. A movement of what might be called material, corporeal waves, as vast as the earth, but not round, not flat. Something giving a great sense of infinity, but moving in waves. And this wave movement is the movement of life. And the body consciousness floats along in this with a sensation of eternal peace. So this is how she is experiencing her body. And we are experiencing it from the other side and can't understand. It's a limitless movement with a very harmonious and very tranquil rhythm. What I call me, then she gives a gesture of high above. My consciousness is completely outside the body. Again, she affirms. That's what the consciousness of the body is. What I have been just describing. And the only reminder of connection is that there are points of pain. That's what it is like. And this pain has a small and extremely limited life. It's not general. It's not a body that suffers. It's suffering that suffers. My physical consciousness has been universalized for a long, long time. It encompasses all terrestrial movements, but the body is limited solely to this small concentration of substance. Then again she clarifies. And when I said I have left my body, Mother said on April 3rd, I am no more in my body. It certainly didn't mean I have left the physical consciousness. I have left the bodily aspect, which is a different appearance. It is rather an illusory appearance. So she says that this body now that you are experiencing is an illusory appearance. And she says such interesting things. The Amal Kiran has written a whole article on this mother's message. I think it's her 80th birthday. Which means much before she was experiencing something very interesting. Or maybe 90th, I'm not sure. But she gives a message to celebrate the birth of a transitory body. To celebrate the birth of a transitory body may satisfy some faithful feelings. But to celebrate the birth of a new consciousness is an exceptional privilege and it can be done at every moment. So, you know, one could look at it like this, that mother is speaking of her body as a transient. No, it's not that. He says something very interesting and it goes with what she is saying. Transitory body, a body in transition and not a transient body. That's a body which is anyways like anybody, an illusionist will say. So she is saying that what you are experiencing repeatedly, she says, is an appearance. But the reality of what I am, physically even, is a different thing altogether. She continues. This is May 18th, 1962. I could now say, what used to be my body? And she makes another remark about the body, that I could now say what used to be my body. The will that deals with the body was annulled. It reminded me of a line in Sri Aurobindo's Savitri, annul thyself that only God may be. This is a line actually in connection with Savitri's yoga towards the end. The book of yoga in the last canto where the final command she gets is annul thyself. So everything is annulled. For days and days she's not even aware of anything like this physical body. The body was merely something moved around by the people looking after me. Not that it was separate, but I couldn't even say it's a body. It wasn't anything anymore. It's amazing. It's, you know, how these things correlate. Just 2-3 days back in the evening, I was sitting and watching Mother's room and the lights were on and I was wondering how hot she must be feeling because the windows are closed. Human thought. I said, look, we are feeling hot. And Mother has said, you know, how we treat those who have gone away, but the mother is here. And it must be very difficult. I mean, she won't say anything, but it's a very human thought, I know, that, you know, we should open the windows. It's not good to, you know, close all the windows and cramp up. You know, she's there in that room. And I was looking at that room and all these thoughts were coming. So yesterday somebody tells me another very interesting things that when, interesting experience that when the mother's room was being cleaned and prepared, so the carpet and everything was being removed, and this person felt, oh my God, you know, because it's, you know, even doing something in a room is tremendous. It needs to be done very consciously. And the person was feeling a little inwardly flustered. And suddenly, there was this luminous column of light, not seen, but felt, touching and reassuring and completely bathing and submerging with peace and tranquility. So it's a very, you know, solid, concrete presence which is there. And I must say, not just an inner presence, but a very concrete physical presence of a transformed body. So the disciple is all confused. So he says, what do you mean I am no more in this body? Does it mean that you have withdrawn? Mother says, oh no, nothing withdrew. It had already withdrawn a long time ago. So she says, if you talk about withdrawing from the body, I had withdrawn a long time ago. So what was it? She says, I felt the body, not withdrawn from the body, but as body as outside me. This is literally the experience of death, literally described in the Upanishad. And Swami Vivekananda, when he left the body, he came into the inner vision of someone and actually described it that, of course, in words which are very strong words, that I have spat out my body. Literally, I have thrown it outside myself. And the mother says that earlier, for a long time, I have withdrawn from my body. You think I am confined to this body? I am not confined to this body. It's only a bridge between you and me, because otherwise you can't connect. But she says, this time, the body was outside me. It's literally the experience of death. The consciousness wasn't at all centered in the body. When I said I, for instance, it never occurred to me that I was this, mother points to her body. I, the I who spoke, was always a will entirely independent of the body, entirely independent. But there has been a strange phenomenon since April 3rd. Before, I used to say, I am outside my body. It was always I am outside my body. But this time, the body seemed to have been consigned or entrusted. And I would say, the body is outside me. Looks like a small difference. It's a big difference. Yogis can step outside the body. Greatest of yogis. It's not common. That's how they can travel to other planes. And the mother at one time used to do this. She speaks of these wonderful experiences. Once about the Himalayas. It's a beautiful experience that she was sitting and meditating, and she describes it how the Lord can use a small occasion to transport you to another state. So she always wanted to go to the Himalayas because, you know, Himalayas carry that ambience, and she wanted to go to the Himalayas. And well, she came, and Shurvindo, that's it. That was the end and beginning of everything. But this wish was there to go to the Himalayas. So one day when she was sitting with open eyes, she sees the wall, and on the wall, shards of glass, like, you know, we put on the wall to prevent thieves from coming in. Of course, thieves are very smart, but that's a different matter. So they were glass pieces. And she looks at one of the glass pieces, and as the sunlight is reflecting on the glass piece, suddenly she is transported to the Himalayas. She sees the Himalayan peaks, and she has an entire vision of the whole Himalaya. This kind of experience she had even as a 15-year-old when she was in a cathedral, and suddenly she sees light flashing on the wall, and she is transported into a totally different world. This, of course, she used to go out of her body very, very often, and so, you know, these kind of experiences would come. And then she says that another time I also had the experience of the sea. Of course, she could walk to the sea, but there was a time when she was she had deliberately chosen to stay inside the room, and suddenly she saw through the window a little bit of water, a body of water, and she was transported into, she said, not only I was in the sea, I could experience the waves and actually the breeze and everything. The Lord took me and gave that whole experience. So withdrawing from the body was a common experience for her. But the first time it was that the body is outside me. Pain is the one thing I sense the way I used to. The only thing that remains as a connection with the old world is pain. Food, for instance, taste, smell, vision, hearing, all that's completely changed. And she says that sometimes people think that I can't hear and I can't see. They don't know. I see more clearly and I hear much more clearly. She speaks about it. She says, I see what is truth and I want to see. And I don't see what I, like this whole world, this obscurity, she doesn't care about it. She says, I very well see. But they think mother can't see well. They also think I can't hear well. But I hear precisely everything that I have to hear. So she says, all this has changed, even food has changed. One of the last things to change in the body consciousness is the food. She says, even that has completely changed. They belong to another rhythm. So this used to be a big problem because the doctor and everybody felt she must eat. And the mother would persistently refuse to eat. And she would walk and faint. And the impression was that because she is not eating, she has grown weak and she is fainting. And she says, no, it's not like that. The whole rhythm has changed altogether. They belong to another rhythm. And this condition has come progressively like a crystallization of something behind the senses that doesn't come from here in taste, smell, vision, hearing, touch, except this one point, pain. Now here again she gives a secret of transformation. It is the crystallization progressively. Sri Aurobindo speaks about it earlier also in one of his, when he talks about cryptically that I will come once again manifest in the first supramental body created in the supramental way. So that means it's a progressive crystallization into the physical matter. This is something which Amal Kiran has also spoken and Nalinda has also hinted that it's through a crystallization. She says it has crystallized itself in this way. And then she makes a very remarkable, it reminds one of the Gita. What the Gita has revealed in the highest, in the sense of the spirit, she reveals in matter. Pain is the old world. Anityam asukham lokam bhajasama. Pain is the old world. And I have the definite impression that that so-called illness was the external and illusory form of an indispensable process of transformation. Who knows? Even now, because of the pressure of yoga, many times when we experience sudden exhaustions, faintness, pains and aches in the body, it's a process which we don't understand. It's not that everything can be labeled as that, but definitely sometimes we don't find anything and the doctors have a need to label, but we really don't know what's going on. We didn't know even when mother was telling us. So how do we know about what's happening with the human body? What kind of changes and what is going to happen 50 years down the line. Many kinds of aches and pains which are part of the process. So she says, without that so-called illness, there could be no transformation. It is not an illness. I know it. When people speak of illness, something in me laughs and says, what a bunch of geese. She is really honoring the doctors by calling them geese. And everybody, it was everyone, the condition of humanity. She says, I laugh and say, what a bunch of geese. It is not an illness. And the only concrete thing left in this world of illusion, is pain. See, she uses these two words. Anityam, transient, illusory, passing. Asukham, pain. It seems to me the very essence of falsehood. But what feels it very concretely, I clearly see it is false. But I have been forbidden to utilize my knowledge, power and force to annul the pain in the way I used to do it. So she says that I have been forbidden because now it's not about her transformation, but the points of pain in the cosmos, which is there in that physical body, which she is working upon. Each point is something of the falsehood in this world on which she is acting. So this is what is my impression. It's, of course, anybody's take on that. That she had completed the transformation. She speaks about the new body. When the disciple asked her, when will I see your new body? She says, you have to be prepared, much prepared. She didn't say that it's not yet ready. But what happened post 62 was working on the cosmic falsehood, the cosmic pain for which she had kept the body, or the Lord had kept that body for the working. The old way of relating no longer exists at all. And in relation to that, she makes finally, I am or have the consciousness of a dead person on earth. Yeah, mother's words. I am putting it into words, but it seemed to say, this is how the consciousness of a dead person is in relation to the earth and physical things. I am a dead person living on earth. This is how the dead are in relation to the earth. Again she repeats, I am the way a dead person lives without any consciousness of the earth. I am quite like a dead person living on earth. And so on. And she goes on speaking and doing things. But it has been like that for a long time. What the Lord wants is done. Again she reminds us, what the Lord wants is done. That's all. It begins there and ends there. If he told me, whatever he wants the body to do, it can do. It no longer depends on physical laws. Very categorical statement of the mother, that what he is doing with the body is something else. The body does not depend on physical laws. So this what for today, next week, something for us, what we should do in this state, and how she gives very beautifully a beautiful remedy for us when we go through pains, troubles and difficulties and challenges of life. The whole yoga changed after this. We see that after 62, the way, the whole process of yoga, the way she made it so much simpler, because she had annulled or at least resolve this problem of pain for man, which Shobindo mentions so beautifully in one line in Savitri, which is the real solution for pain. On one side, anityam asukham lokam bhajasvamam, and Shobindo says, thy embrace, O Lord, that rends the living knot of pain. Thy embrace, O Lord, that rends the living knot of pain. So we'll close here next week.